Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Prescott Daily Courier for Sunday, November 2nd, 2025. I'm volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Front page articles include local food pantries dealing with surging demand amid shutdown-related SNAP uncertainty, Natural History Institute names new executive director, and Lincoln Elementary School celebrates annual Halloween parade. Now the stories behind the headlines. Local food pantries dealing with surging demand amid shutdown-related SNAP uncertainty by Gillian Gus Andrews, The Daily Courier. 26 states are currently suing the federal government for cutting off SNAP benefits, nutrition support formerly known as food stamps, that ensure American families have enough to eat. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays is among those who have filed lawsuits. SNAP benefits are in limbo as Congress has not passed a federal budget. Judges ruling on the suits Friday, however, have given the administration until Monday, November 3rd, to release SNAP's existing contingency funds. But even before the looming cutoff, which now appears might only be a delay, Yavapai County nutrition support resources, like food banks, pantries, and community meal servers, had seen increasing numbers of people asking for help. The number of kids eligible for free or low-cost school lunches in local districts was already high, ranging from a little over 1 in 3 kids in Prescott to 2 in 3 in the Humboldt District to almost every kid in Mayer. How are Yavapai County communities going to fill in these gaps to make sure their neighbors have the food they need? The Courier asked some questions about where the need is greatest, why this is happening, how local organizations ensure everyone gets adequate nutrition, and what government funds might be available to provide this nutrition. Why do more Yavapai County residents need help getting food? Wages are not keeping up with the increase in groceries or monthly expenses, said Kate Morrill, interim executive director of Manzanita Outreach, which coordinates multiple food distribution sites in Verde Valley. You can't not pay your rent or your car insurance and still have a place to live or a way to get to work. Being able to save money by getting free groceries at a food pantry is a relief and means getting room back in their budgets to be able to afford gas, insurance, rent, and child care, Morrill said. See the accompanying graphic for a breakdown of the costs families are facing in the Quad City area. What's the difference between a food bank and a food pantry? While food banks may have products like meat and eggs, which must be refrigerated, pantries more often have only items that can last on shelves for a long time, known as shelf-stable food. Food banks often buy meat, eggs, and milk in bulk and at a discount, directly from wholesale companies. Some also receive these so-called commodity foods from St. Mary's, a non-denominational nonprofit in Phoenix, which, as it happens, was the first food bank in the world, founded in 1967. Now that they've come back out of the stratosphere, I can buy eggs from St. Mary's for $1 a dozen, said George Chesney, co-manager of the food pantry at St. Luke's Episcopal Church. We literally would be out of business without them. What's the best way to help food support organizations right now? Because food banks can stretch a dollar further than most shoppers, donating money helps the most, said multiple food bank and pantry directors. Unlike donated goods, financial gifts give us the flexibility to buy exactly what's needed when it's needed, said Jessica Wilson of Old Town Mission in Cottonwood. Because eggs, milk, and meat expire more quickly, organizations need to buy them regularly. What non-financial donations are most needed? Though money is the biggest help, most food bank and pantry directors said they welcome donations of shelf-stable food as well. paper towels, toilet paper, and other paper goods, as well as hygiene products, soap, razors, shampoo, toothpaste, feminine hygiene products, etc., and cleaning products like dish soap and laundry detergent were also high on the list for not only pantries, but also homelessness and youth organizations. SNAP benefits do not cover these daily necessities. The occasional special item can also make a big difference for struggling families. Yavapai Food Bank representatives said they were worried they won't be able to meet demand for turkeys this Thanksgiving. And Lisa DeLeo of Granite Peak Unitarian Universalist Congregation prepared birthday bags for visitors to their pantry, including cake mix, frosting, candles, and a baking dish. This came just in time for one family, as the next day they were celebrating their daughter's third birthday. Most of the organizations the courier spoke with said that, with the support of their communities, they were hopeful they could meet increasing demand. "I pray regularly and ask God to supply our needs so we don't have to turn anyone away," said Ann Wilson, executive director of Yavapai Food Bank. "We might have some dark days ahead, but I feel like we'll be able to do what we can. We're pretty confident that we'll be able to accommodate and serve everybody," Morrill said. "We just come together as a community and get it done." Are there state funds available for food help? If families have any leftover funds from recent months on their electronic benefit cards, EBT, they can still use those funds where those cards are accepted. But that's an if. In November, DES will still accept new applications for SNAP, called Nutrition Assistance in Arizona, as well. Governor Katie Hobbs has moved to keep supporting hungry Arizona families in the event of a gap with a new voucher program called Food Bucks Now. Families will be able to redeem these vouchers for $30 of SNAP-eligible food and $10 of fresh produce at local markets that participate in the Double Up program, including the Prescott Farmers Market. On top of this $300,000 allocation, Hobbs is also allocating $1.5 million in leftover American Rescue Plan Act funds to food banks throughout the state, and the Double Up program itself makes benefits go further. "We're able to double their token amount thanks to Double Up Food Bucks AZ," said Kathleen Yetman, director of the Prescott Farmers Market. "For every dollar customers receive in our SNAP EBT tokens, they also receive another $1 token that can be used for Arizona-grown produce." Are there federal funds available for food help? The federal government does have $6 billion in SNAP contingency funds, but that falls short of the $9 billion in benefits SNAP usually distributes in a month, according to news from the states. That site also noted that before September 30, the USDA's website published a plan that included using these funds to cover SNAP in the event of a shutdown, but that page has since been removed from the website. Senate Democrats wrote to the USDA last week urging the department to use these and other funds to cover SNAP benefits. The USDA issued a memo last week stating that recipients would not receive benefits due to congressional Democrats' refusal to pass a clean continuing resolution, and that the government could only legally use the contingency funds for disasters or when there were not enough funds for regular monthly benefits. Republican Susan Collins, chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, urged USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins to consider all available options, including using contingency funds. U.S. District Court Judge Indira Talwani ruled Friday that the U.S. Department of Agriculture must use the approximately $5.25 billion it has in a contingency fund to make up for the fact that Congress has not approved a new budget for the agency. Were illegal immigrants eligible for SNAP benefits before the current budget bill? No, according to the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act, which was signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1996 and was aligned with the Republican Party's Contract with America. Only lawful residents of the U.S. and legally qualified aliens, including trafficking victims and people who have gotten approved asylum or refugee status, were eligible for benefits. Natural History Institute names new executive director by Parker Jones, The Daily Courier. Jenny Tutone has begun a new role as the executive director of the Natural History Institute, NHI, in Prescott. After longtime executive director Bob Ellis retired from the NHI in July, the organization's board selected a familiar face to take his place. Tutone, who has held several positions at the nonprofit over the past 4 years, became executive director on October 13, following a brief period as interim director. The NHI is an education nonprofit dedicated to making natural history engaging and relevant by blending art, science, and the humanities, as stated on the Institute's website. Tutone, born and raised in Prescott, first learned about the NHI back when it was a program at Prescott College in 2015. She said she attended lectures and started to build knowledge of the programming that the Institute offers. After some time at Northern Arizona University, she worked with the Prescott National Forest before finding her way back to the NHI. "Nature has always been the thing that keeps me here and makes me love our area," Tutone said. "I got a position with the Prescott National Forest as a biological science technician, so I did all of the wildlife, natural resource, and plant surveys, and really just got a deep knowledge and appreciation of our actual forest. My supervisor at the time let me know once my season was ended, in my third year working there, that the National History Institute was hiring." She began as the NHI Scientific Collections Manager before working her way to become Office Manager and Program Director before leading the entire organization. As the new director, Tutone said she hopes to build on the foundation Ellis left by expanding programming and deepening the organization's community ties. "A major focus," she said, "will be drawing greater attention to the Magoyan Highlands ecoregion, which stretches from Kingman, Arizona, to western New Mexico and includes the Prescott area." Tutone said the Institute's staff believes the Magoyan Highlands may be among the most biologically diverse regions in the U.S. Through field-based programs and community education, she said she hopes the organization can raise awareness of the area's importance, both locally and nationally. "Our plan is for us to do these really deep dives of different disciplines, geology, ornithology, botany, human history, and have experiences for people to engage in our ecoregion," Tutone said. "That's what I'm really looking forward to, is expanding our program in that experiential way so the public can get to immerse themselves in our natural world locally and also have other people come visit and engage in that as well." However, taking on the executive director position also comes with new responsibilities outside of the Institute's base programming. One challenge Tutone anticipates is learning how to run the organization's fundraising efforts, especially during a tumultuous time for nonprofits on the national level. "Fundraising is a completely new thing for me. My background is in science and programming and community education," Tutone said. "I really think that the best way to connect donors is also connecting them to our programming. But I'm going to take it one step at a time and really make those personal one-on-one connections and build our community." Ultimately, Tutone said she aims to continue the Natural History Institute's interdisciplinary approach, especially by furthering its artistic endeavors as well as its conservation side. "One thing that we do is we blend the arts, science, and humanities," she said. "We just had an art gallery opening last Friday, and our next upcoming talk is an artist talk with the featured artist Carolyn Schmitz. The event, scheduled for November 20, will take place at the Institute's Prescott Gallery at 126 North Marina Street downtown and will also be live streamed. Another major project in development is a scientific workshop on the Upper Verde River, which the organization is planning in collaboration with the Sierra Club and the Nature Conservancy. We're inviting scientists and land management agency folks to discuss the current state of the Upper Verde, Tutone said. At the end of this, we're hoping for an action plan to propose to the land management agencies to further protect the Upper Verde. The workshop is expected to take place in early 2026 and will bring together researchers, land managers, and conservation groups to share data and explore next steps. Tutone said incorporating art and the humanities helps make science-based programming more accessible to a wider audience. Maybe you're not a scientist, but you can engage with it because you like the arts, or maybe you like poetry, she said. We have all this great programming that they can go to our website and find out about, and our art gallery is open Tuesday through Friday, noon to 4, so they can stop by. You're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier from the studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Lincoln Elementary School celebrates annual Halloween parade by Abigail Celaya, The Daily Courier. Elementary school students from Lincoln, Prescott Unified School District's oldest school, march downtown to the Courthouse Plaza for their annual Halloween parade on Friday, October 31st. Though the school is unsure of the exact number of years, Lincoln has been participating in this age-old tradition for decades, somewhere between 50 and 60 years. Stan Goligoski, governing board president, said his wife participated in the parade when she went to Lincoln. Clark Tenney said students at the school regularly take advantage of opportunities to be in the community. Maybe the only thing cuter than all the kids in their costumes was seeing the reactions of happy parents and community members, Tenney said. Kindergarteners through fourth graders walked through their classmates from their school to the square in a variety of colorful costumes. Some highlights included Spider-Man, Wednesday Addams, inflatable dinosaurs and penguins, Coraline, witches, and princesses. Lincoln teachers dressed as Dalmatians from the classic Disney film Dalmatians, while Principal Teresa Brusso took on the lead role of Cruella de Vil. During the parade, one student told her they liked her clown costume. She laughed and explained she was the popular Disney villain. Downtown Prescott was closed to vehicles that morning as officers from the police department lined the streets to keep kids safe. One motorcycle officer was seen giving high fives to kids as they crossed the street, telling them to have a happy Halloween. Students from Mile High Middle School also lined the streets in costume, creating a tunnel for the elementary school children to walk through and receive cheers of encouragement. Some members of the PUSD governing board were present at the parade, with a few of them dressed up in costume. Close to the courthouse, parents and community members lined the streets to watch, complimenting costumes and waving. A few dressed-up community members gave out candy. The Lincoln Halloween Parade is a long-standing tradition that I thoroughly enjoy, said Sarah Torres, member of the PUSD Governing Board and administrative assistant to the superintendent. I love seeing our students' creativity shine through their costumes and seeing the smiles on their little faces as they celebrate together. Trump declines to clarify if the U.S. will conduct tests of its nuclear weapons. By Michelle L. Price and Manuel Zineta. Associated Press. Aboard Air Force One. President Donald Trump declined to say Friday whether he plans to resume underground nuclear detonation tests, as he had seemed to suggest in a social media post last week that raised concerns the U.S. would begin testing nuclear weapons for the first time in three decades. The president told reporters, "You'll find out very soon," without elaborating when asked if he means to resume underground nuclear detonation tests. Trump, who spoke to reporters aboard Air Force One as he headed to Florida for a weekend stay, said, "We're going to do some testing, and other countries do it. If they're going to do it, we're going to do it," but then refused to offer more details. His comments on nuclear testing have drawn confusion inside and outside the government when the president seemed to suggest in a brief post that the U.S. would resume nuclear warhead tests on an equal basis with Russia and China, whose last known tests were in the 1990s. Some of Trump's comments seem to refer to testing missiles that would deliver a warhead rather than the warhead itself. There has been no indication that the U.S. would start detonating warheads. The U.S. military already regularly tests its missiles that are capable of delivering a nuclear warhead, but it has not detonated the weapons since 1992. The Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, which the U.S. signed but did not ratify, has been observed since its adoption by all countries possessing nuclear weapons, North Korea being the only exception. The Pentagon has not responded to questions. The Energy Department, which oversees the U.S. nuclear stockpile, declined to comment Friday. Trump's post on nuclear tests came as Russia last week announced it had tested a new atomic-powered and nuclear-capable underwater drone and a new nuclear-powered cruise missile. Russia responded to Trump's post by underscoring that it did not test its nuclear weapons and has abided by a global ban on nuclear testing. The Kremlin warned, though, that if the U.S. resumes testing its weapons, Russia will as well, an intensification that would restart Cold War-era tensions. Vice Admiral Richard Coral, Trump's nominee to lead the military command in charge of the nation's nuclear arsenal, struggled to interpret the president's comments when he testified before senators during a Capitol Hill hearing Thursday, telling them, "I'm not reading anything into it or reading anything out of it." Paulden Grasslands Become Refuge for Burrowing Owls by Stan Bindel for The Courier. About 24 burrowing owls were recently relocated to the remote grasslands of Paulden to save them after they were losing their habitat in the Phoenix area because of development. Greg Clark, burrowing owl habitat coordinator with the nonprofit Wild at Heart, said the Chino Valley and Prescott Valley areas have the densest amount of burrowing owls in the state, thanks to the grasslands that the burrowing owls love. Burrowing owls are unique. Unlike other owls, they are out both day and night. Unlike other owls that may mate for life, the burrowing owls sometimes mate for life, sometimes stay alone, and sometimes live in packs. Clark said burrowing owls are important to the ecosystem. If there is something wrong with either the burrowing owl, prairie dogs, or black-footed ferrets, there is something wrong with all three of them because they all use the burrows. It also helps that the burrowing owls have cute personalities. People like to watch them, he said. We need to make sure that we see their value rather than viewing them as pests. It's all about sustaining the population and being good stewards of the land. Clark said the location sites always depend on whether there is enough food. If there are grasslands with insects and rodents, then Clark is confident that the burrowing owls will prosper. If you see 4 or 5, you know they are doing well, he said. Relocating the burrowing owls is a scientific undertaking. First, a tent is put up to make them feel more safe in their new home. Second, the burrows are built and the volunteers come out to feed them once a day. 2 volunteers go out to the site daily to feed the burrowing owls. There are about 15 volunteers for the Paulden site, with at least 2 volunteers going out each day. The tents are eventually taken down, and once the burrows are put in, the local burrowing owls usually join the burrowing owls that have been relocated. The owls will also lay their eggs while they are in the tents. The eggs are incubated by the females while the males go out hunting, and the males like to protect their territory. There were 12 tents with 2 owls each when Wild at Heart started the relocation effort, but the tents have since been taken down. Some didn't want to stay in the tents, Clark said. The burrowing owls in the tents will recruit the local burrowing owls. For Clark, this has been a long labor of love. An engineer by trade, he has been volunteering to save the burrowing owls for 26 years, 7 days a week. Days off are rare, with his wife Sydney going along to help. The last time they took a day off was 2 years ago to go to Hawaii, and in 2019 to visit London. Need to know. Findlay Subaru installs broken caber from Highland Games. Wallace Automotive opens Arizona Avenue location in Prescott. KMF Real Estate to open office in Chino Valley November 7. By Jim Wright, The Daily Courier. Findlay Subaru installs broken caber from Highland Games. Findlay Subaru celebrated the addition of a broken caber from the Highland Games with a ribbon-cutting ceremony October 28th. A caber is a large, tapered wooden log traditionally used in one of the most iconic events of the Scottish Highland Games, the caber toss. The word caber comes from the Gaelic caber, meaning wooden beam. Typically made from a larch tree, a caber can be 16 to 20 feet tall and weigh 90 to 150 pounds. In this event, competitors, called tossers, lift the caber vertically with the tapered end down, run forward to gain momentum, and attempt to flip it end over end so it lands with the larger end hitting the ground first and the smaller end pointing directly away from the thrower, ideally in the 12 o'clock position. It's not about distance, but precision and control. The installation at the dealership, arranged with the Prescott Area Celtic Society, celebrates the strength, heritage, and adventurous spirit shared by both the Highland Games and Subaru. For more information about Subaru, call 928-771-6900 or visit https://www.findlaysubaruprescott.com. For more information about the Prescott Area Celtic Society, email president.pacs2024@gmail.com or call 928-642-0020. Wallace Automotive opens Arizona Avenue location in Prescott. Wallace Automotive opened its new location at 320 North Arizona Avenue, Suite 400 in Prescott, Saturday, November 1. The veteran-owned family-run automotive repair facility has over 25 years of experience and can handle diesel and gas engine repairs. The facility had previously been on 5th Street in Prescott. For more information, call 928-800-2373 or email jason@wallaceauto.net. KMF Real Estate to open office in Chino Valley November 7. KMF Real Estate will be celebrating the grand opening of its new office at 1689 Highway 89 in Chino Valley, 3 to 6 p.m. Friday, November 7. The company, which also has an office at 3250 Gateway Boulevard, Suite 314 in Prescott, provides a variety of buyer and seller services, including acquainting buyers with every neighborhood in their price range, helping identify areas buyer particularly like, and taking buyers to potential homes on the market as soon as possible. Other services include advice on writing an impressive offer that stands out from others, ensuring the offer is presented, and getting a home at the best possible price. For more information, visit gandmteam.com or call 928-356-5133. That's all the time we have for the Prescott Daily Courier. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, I'm volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Thanks for listening.